The church was to give the sex lessons to the youth group in the chance that parents were not actually doing their job of talking to their kids about sex. And so I always felt kind of an obligation to do some of that. And it was really great until my own kids got in the youth group, and then it went downhill really quick after that. But one of the things that I would do when we would start off this topic is that I would... This would have been back in the days of overhead projectors where you could actually do something up in front. And I would just begin writing, and so it would be projected up there, and I would just start off listing activities that teenagers could be involved in with the opposite sex if they were in some kind of a relationship with them. And so it just started off with looking. And then, next up would be sitting next to each other. And, next up would be holding hands. And next up would be putting your arm around each other. Now, I'll be honest, our entire dating life was lived out, mine and Wanda's, in the youth group, because we started dating when we were 15 years old in the church with nobody telling us what to do. And so, the holding hands and sitting next to each other in the pew and writing notes to each other instead of paying attention to the preacher and all those things that we did. I understood those things, and so that list went on. And it doesn't take a great deal of explanation to you to know what some of the things were as we got up higher on the list of things that you could do in a romantic relationship that would turn to a sexual relationship. And it got up into kissing and to different kinds of kissing. And I would write them. I just write it in graphic detail. I thought, well, my guess is that nobody else is being this graphic with these kids except for all of their friends. And I thought, well, I'll be the adult in the room and talk about it as an adult. And it would get all the way up to the very top, which would kind of culminate in, with the big sexual intercourse right at the top. And so there's this long list of things going up. And I would just ask kids, I would go, okay, you guys always ask me, so I'm going to ask you. And I would just pick a kid in the youth group, and I'd go, I want you to walk up to the overhead projector, and I want you to put a line somewhere on that list that answers the question, how far is too far? Where's the line? Because they would always ask me, hey Mike, is this going too far? And it's like, duh. Okay. But I'd turn it on them, and we would just go kind of look at the list, and they would. It's so funny because the ones that were trying to impress me would put a line just above holding hands, and kind of walk away with that spiritual look, going, "Aren't I spiritual?" And literally, there would always be kids in the youth group who would walk up there and put the line right below sexual intercourse. Everything else, okay. Use your imagination what everything else was on that list. I'm telling you, sex sells. In the youth group, in pop culture, in the church. I truly hope none of you have this book, nor will you go out and buy it. The book is called, it's a real book, you can look it up. It's called The 50-Mile Rule. Your Guide to Infidelity and Extramarital Etiquette by Judith Brandt. Let me read you from the cover. At least half of all married men and women have cheated on their spouse at least once. Hope that's not true. Yet cheaters often find themselves stumbling through their marriage and their affairs. causing great pain to themselves and the people they care about. If you're considering having an affair or suspect that your partner is having one, Judith Brandt's The 50-Mile Rule will show you how to safely stray or how to catch your adultering partner. The 50-Mile Rule gives men and women the information they need to make smarter decisions when pursuing sex outside of marriage, including the rule that spouse and lover should never live within 50 miles of each other. Hence the name. Discover who makes a suitable affair partner, the rules you must never break, when to call it quits, and what to do if you're caught. With sensible facts that make a case for fidelity. Okay, I'm going to read that again just so you can hear what I just read, the lunacy of that line. With sensible facts that make a case for fidelity, as well as practical tips for having successful affairs. The 50-Mile Rule is the ultimate handbook for cheater and scorned alike. Okay. Wow. 7 weeks ago, we started studying through the Ten Commandments, kind of taking one a week and looking at it and seeing how the Ten Commandments from hundreds and hundreds of years ago might still apply to us and in what way. We have reached commandment number 7 today, if you're keeping track. Anybody have any idea what it is? You shall not commit adultery. There it is, in black and white. Now, I'll tell you this ahead of time. Today is not tremendously complicated. All right? It really isn't. And I don't mean to make light of anything, but it is not complicated today. But you may learn something. I know I did as I studied through this, learned some things. Common definition for adultery: cheating on your spouse. I mean, that's sort of the layman's definition. Let me give you a technical definition, which I think is a little more helpful, although you're going to go, really, that one's more technical than cheating on your spouse? Here's the definition. Do not have sex with somebody you're not married to. See, it got widened a little bit, didn't it? The definition got widened a little bit. I'll widen it a little more. Do not have sex with someone you're not married to. Anybody. Anytime. See, it's kind of fascinating. You don't have to be married to commit adultery in the truest of definitions. Adultery is kind of an archaic word. We would throw it around these days if we wanted to show how cool we were that we knew the King James Version of something. Okay? I hesitate to think that guys are sitting around at bars these days going, "Hey, did you commit adultery lately?" I just don't think that rolls off of our lips very easily. The word doesn't come out that way. But it seems like the teaching that we see in God's Word is both simple and profound at the same time. Because sexual intimacy is in fact so profound and so sacred and so personal, so life-changing, save it for your spouse alone. It's kind of the heart of this teaching. The purpose of the command is deeper than simply another rule to abide by. But it is in the context of the rule that we see something a lot deeper. What we see in the context of the "you shall not commit adultery" is honor marriage. Honor it. Don't undermine the values of marriage. The covenant of marriage, those promises that were exchanged between husband and wife, the covenant of marriage, the promises made, was foundational to their culture. Now I realize that we can take a really close reading of the Old Testament and find a lot of blips on the radar where it sure looks like the covenant of marriage was not honored by all. But it does not in any way undermine the teaching or the values that God has passed on to His people, both then and now. Not unlike the days of the Old Testament, we today live in a culture of sexual freedom. You should have seen me working on this going, now, which words am I going to use to describe this? You know, because there are literally dozens and dozens. But we live in a culture of sexual freedom. We live in a culture of perversity. Recreational sex. No boundaries. You can blame my generation, if you are younger. You can blame my generation for creating the mantra of, if it feels good, do it. We did that one. We own it. You know, the 60s. I've told you this before. It astounds me. Counseling sessions that I have with sometimes both, usually with one of the married partners. They're still married, of course. And one of the partners will say to me, usually after I have asked them, they will own up to, well, yeah, our marriage isn't doing very well, and actually I'm seeing somebody else right now. I usually try to stop at that point and go, really? Surprise. But then the theological discussion ensues. Here's how it goes. You know, you really shouldn't do that. That's me. You really shouldn't be having an affair. To which the responder says back to me, but doesn't God want me to be happy? Now, there are people who actually say that to me. The words actually come out of their mouths. Isn't the highest goal of living to be happy? I mean, isn't that why our military is over there defending us so that I can pursue happiness in any way I want to? Well, yes and no. As long as you take God out of it, okay? And for me to look at somebody and go, I really don't think that we ought to be having the discussion that says that God's highest goal in life is to make you happy. I think there's some other things on the list. We live in a day and age. And what we have today is just an extension of what has been going on for generations. People are simply not taught anymore that the sexual relationship within marriage is sacred. It's sacred ground. It's holy. It is to be built on purity. And the fact of the matter is, we, and it may not be you personally, so don't get ruffled when I say we, but the collective we have redefined and cheapened marriage and blurred the lines of healthy human relationships. And we all know that's true. Trust me, today is not about heaping guilt on anybody. We're all part and parcel of a culture that struggles with this. Since the days of the Puritans, remember your history books? Since the days of the Puritans, religious people have taught that sex was dirty. So people in church grew up with that. I grew up with that in my own church. It was just like this dirty little secret. Truth is, the Bible teaches otherwise. You ought to read it. There's some crazy stuff in there. Or that sex is only really for making babies and populating the planet. And that's the reason why God instituted this thing, rather than a way to fulfill the depth and purpose of entering into a covenant. Or saying, and look, if you're a parent, we've all been guilty of this on some level, in some way. Looking at our kids and going, hey, bucko, the Bible says you can't do that. When we really have no idea where it says that in the Bible at all. We just assume it's in there and whack people over the head with it. So, I've kind of ended my rant. Did Jesus have anything to say about this commandment? Okay. Let me give you a little interpretation, kind of from my point of view. We're going to go back to the same place we were at last week. Do you remember if you were here last week, we looked back at the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit murder. Because if you do, you're subject to judgment. That was the law. And then Jesus follows that up with, but I say to you, he said, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you, you better not even get angry with people. Because those who get angry with people are subject to judgment in the same way. And it rocked their world, just as it rocks ours. Raise your hand right now, if any time in the last week you stopped yourself from calling somebody an idiot or a moron based on the sermon last week. Come on, raise your hand. Okay, sermon worked. We live in a kinder, gentler neighborhood. How many of you put an asterisk on that law and said, well, that doesn't apply when I'm driving? Yeah, okay. I get that one too. Matthew 5, just after Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, you shall not commit murder, he chases it with this one. He says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Ah! Okay? This verse was the bane of teenage boys who had to go to church. Okay? And let me tell you, this was a beat down for those of us who grew up living on the beach in Southern California. Okay? I remember when we moved here 23 years ago and I took our kids from this youth group to church camp in Texas for the first time. And I show up on the first day with my group of little middle school kids, and they're giving me the schedule for the week. And I look at the schedule, and I realize that there was, because they had a pool at the camp, and the girls got to swim during this hour, and the guys got to swim during that hour. They were never to be in the pool together, ever. My head exploded. I'd never heard of anything like that. Probably not a bad idea. We have been raised, especially those of us who have been raised in the church. But it really isn't just people who are raised in the church. It's part of our culture. We have been raised to understand that lust, it's just an ugly word, isn't it? Even when you say it. That lust equals an overly vigorous sexual urge or desire. And it's absolutely evil. That's just what we were taught. The ordinary interpretation of this passage is that lust is equivalent to adultery. It's what it says. And that is, if a man, and this was always couched in man-woman relationships when this was written, when a man, or if a man, sexually desires a woman, he is already guilty of committing adultery with her in God's eyes. Have you heard that teaching? That's what I was taught. That's how it's mostly taught. The problem with that is that it's kind of a cultural definition of lust and of this passage, but it's not necessarily an exact Bible definition. And so just bear with me a little bit. I don't normally do this, okay? But I'm going to show you something in what we end up doing when we try to study the Bible seriously or go at it a little deeper, okay? I want you to look at this passage, and I've added a word, okay? It's in the yellow up here. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully, and then there's that word, epithumio, and that's just, I'm using kind of a general word. It's actually got a different ending on it. But it's the word. Has already committed adultery with her in his heart. That's the word. That's kind of what it looks like if it's translated, a Greek word is translated into English with English letters. That's what it looks like. Now, I want you to see a totally random, not random, but another passage completely different than the Sermon on the Mount passage. It's in Luke. It's one that many of you would know. It says, when the hour came, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table. This is the Last Supper. And he said to them, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Anybody have any idea where I'm going with this? Huh. Look at the next one. I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. It's the same word. It has nothing to do with sex at all. In fact, it is a really positive thing. It's not negative at all. It's a really positive thing. So look how it might be rendered if we wanted to. And he said to them, I have lusted to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Now, that doesn't sound right, does it? But it's actually accurate in a way to use the word because of the way it is often translated. Because, and we'll show the next slide, Larry. next one. There. No, I don't think that would be it. I think I'm lost a little bit here, Larry. We'll just go ahead and shut that down. The word actually means a strong desire. It could be for something positive. It could be for something negative. But the word that is translated to look on a woman lustfully in Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, that word means a strong desire with an intent to take action. It isn't just looking. It is looking and formulating a plan. And that is a completely different thing. And it could be good or bad in any kind of a situation. As far as adultery is concerned, And this, I guess I just want to pass on to you my opinion of this. You can wrestle with it in however you want to. As far as adultery is concerned, Jesus is not saying that thought and action are equal. They are not. Jesus is not saying, once you have thought it, you have done it. That would be absurd. It would be as absurd as saying, once you have gotten angry with somebody, you've murdered them. Anybody with half a brain could look at me and go, no, I didn't. I got mad at him. But there still is something that's going on here. It comes from the meaning of the word. Jesus is saying that once it moves from thought to intent, or a strong desire to take action, you are already well on your way to adultery. You're probably too far down the road to even turn back once you've started to make a plan. It's already deep in your heart. Looking is not the problem that is being addressed here. Looking and thinking through a plan is. So what is this command? What is this command? You shall not commit adultery. And Jesus' further teaching. What does it mean for us right now? Right here, today? Well, I think the initial teaching of it is as clear as it was the first time Moses brought it down from the mountain. Honor your marriage. In fact, honor marriage. Period. But there's more to this teaching because of the words that are used. See if this fits in some of the struggles that you and I might have. I think that Jesus is teaching, especially in the Sermon on the Mount, as he refers back to the Ten Commandments, and this one in particular, I think he's teaching us that the real problems that we have and we experience in our life begin long before we have actually done something to harm ourselves or others. Okay, I'm going to say it again. The real problem, the problems that we have or the problems that we make for ourselves begin long before we have actually done something to harm ourselves or others. Or another way of saying it is sin begins to grow and develop in the secret closet of our souls before anybody ever sees what we do. You see, the you shall not commit adultery can get really personal now. Because it's a greater teaching that applies in every area of our life. Adultery, if we use the specific example, adultery is well on its way before office flirting or a casual lunch has even been scheduled. If intent has already been self-discussed, and you're the only one that's going to know it. You're the only one that knows what's going on in your heart. You see, if looking has turned to thinking about a plan to carry it out, then thinking and looking are the same as adultery, according to Jesus. It's true with just about any sin. You and I can be tempted to believe that our thought life is our own and nobody else's business. You don't know what I'm thinking right now. I can look you in the eyes and I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what memory is zipping past your forehead as we're just talking about these things. The reason why is that it's hidden from those around us. That's the cool thing about thought life. Nobody gets to know. We think as long as our behavior and even our words are okay, we can indulge in any kind of thinking that we want to. I'm not hurting anybody. It's just me and my thoughts. But I want to tell you, that is how we grow comfortable with hypocrisy. One person on the inside and the other on the outside. And the mask is worn. And people sometimes never get to know who the real person is. There is no integrity. The danger is that we have allowed what we have allowed to grow and slowly develop inside our hearts will eventually spill out. Whether it's adultery or anger or judgment or any other kind of darkness. That's the difference between looking and thought and intent and planning. They are all woven together. Now here's the good news. It doesn't need to be that way. It simply doesn't need to be that way. And I think that's why the lessons in Scripture are there for us. This darkness of the heart, this dissonance between who we are behind the mask and who we have always been designed to be, this is why Jesus died on the cross. This is why we can say that by faith we have been set free. We have been redeemed. By faith we come to the cross and we see what it is that Jesus has done, and He has purchased for us, at a minimum, He has purchased for us honesty, where we can look at ourselves and we can look at Him with no mask on. And then maybe someday as we grow with Him, we can begin to take masks off around the people that we rub elbows with, so that we can, in fact, be fully integrated people, being able to worship freely and to serve freely and to have relationships and friendships that really matter and really make a difference. All of that from "You Shall Not Commit Adultery."